Welcome to the Exchange Podcast with All Seated's Director of Marketing Growth, Nick Borelli. Nick chats with change agents, discussing their insights on what's next. This season, Exchange focuses on the metaverse and what it means for business. Subscribe now.
Welcome to Exchange, where we discuss what's next for intentional experience design with expert change agents. I'm your host, Nick Borelli, All Seated's Director of Marketing Growth, and this season of interviews is dedicated to demystifying the metaverse and explaining how the foundations of this emerging reality will change how we come together. Let's meet today's guest.
Hi, my name is Stefano Corazza. I'm the VP and Fellow of Augmented Reality at Adobe, and I'm really excited to be here today.
So this season of interviews is focused on the emerging metaverse. We start off each of these conversations with a yes or no question. Then we discuss why our expert gave this answer. So Stefano, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So yes or no, do you agree with this statement? The metaverse doesn't exist yet.
The metaverse with the capital M, I agree. With the lower case M, there are so many out there today.
I love it. I feel like there's like two paradigms and they're both saying the exact same thing. It's uppercase, lowercase, or it's articles. It's a or the, right? Like either one I think is interchangeable. So we're in the lowercase metaverse right now, right?
Yeah, or the uppercase assumes that all the metaverses are also interconnected to some extent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think for now, lowercase.
So in the world of the lowercase, I deal a lot with Gartner, and they call it like the emerging metaverse, which is another, you know, it's all roughly saying the same idea. Do you feel like this is the metaverse is like a generation almost, and like we're in an early stage of it, and the capital M is inevitable, or do you believe that there's maybe two divergent timelines that could take place here?
I don't think there's two diverging timelines. I think there are two diverging efforts in the industry, or like forces, you can call it.
Sure.
One that tends to like aggregate everything towards one capital M metaverse, and then another set of forces that is instead breaking them down into silos that cannot talk to each other. And you know, it's gonna be a long battle. But I think at the end, some level of interconnection will be achieved.
Got it. Yeah. So I mean, I think it's obvious the value to the organizations that are putting together the walled gardens and also who those people are. Now, who is at the forefront of pushing things towards the capital M? You know, the interconnected. Are there, or not even necessarily organizations, but like who are the types of groups, and who benefits the most from the interconnected one world internet parallel?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of efforts trying to unify and standardize things. So one example that we are pushing very strongly is standardizing around a file format that contains interactivity, for example. So as of today, there is no established standard for an interactive experience. You can wrap 3D assets, you can make a scene, but it cannot include also the full interactivity of an immersive experience. So we are pushing, together with the Kronos Group, an extension of the current GLTF standard, for example, that is trying to address exactly that. So that would be one step towards that. And then I would mention also there are a few startups out there that have created avatar systems that work across multiple worlds. So that's another beautiful example of something that you create an avatar, your digital identity, and then you could take it into thousands of different metaverses or video games. So that's another example of a very positive force, I would say.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of investment in the last like few months around organizations like that, around the idea of the universal avatar. I mean, I think that's really the big difference between the platforms and gaming specifically, where you spend money on avatars and what this capital M metaverse promises. The idea that, you know, this is like clothes that you don't have to take off when you go into the next room. Like these are actually your belongings, and you have the code and you own the code. I mean, as someone who is into gaming, like it would be great for me to make an investment in my identity that would be persistent within other platforms. Like I would be much more likely to spend money on those, you know, digital Nikes that are coming out if I could, you know, not utilize them in just one game that has a shelf life of a few years and then, you know, I'll never use it again.
Absolutely. It's like you never buy a shoe that you can only wear on Mondays.
Right, exactly. Or in certain buildings, you know, yeah, but not exactly. Other buildings.
Exactly.
You know, like, sorry, you can't come in here with those shoes. You have to buy other shoes, which I, you know, the only experience is with my kids in those jump parks that make you wear their special socks. But that's a big digression. Yeah, so that's interesting. I think that you're right. The avatar aspect of it has a commerce element of it, and it that instantly gives value to the idea of the capital M of the shared universe. So I think that that's a great way to push it. Decentralized commerce probably is another element that is so naturally, I guess, gravitates towards anything but a walled garden, right? I mean, so much of their premise is based on disruption of consolidated information. Is that one of the other big factors, I suppose, that would come into play with this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's the platform owners, right? They have the interest for people to stay there on those platforms and to expand them. But ultimately, if I'm like a brand and I'm making, I don't know, a Gucci purse, I want that Gucci purse to exist with total fidelity across as many metaverses as possible. And so definitely, I would imagine that the big brands will push for this interconnected capital M metaverse, and the platform owners at some point may allow for more of that. It also, I think, depends what is the overall sentiment, right, of the people. And because just by visiting one metaverse versus another, it's in itself a statement, and we can support more open metaverses and support less, you know, the least open ones.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see what it would take to get an Apple and a Facebook and a Google and a Microsoft all to sit at one table. You know, I can't envision it as anything other than outside forces having enough gravity to require them to do that. The consolidation of everyone else, because it's not generally the way they play. You know, I think there's probably going to be some sort of walled gardens as well as a capital M that exists as well for certain functionality. So let's get back. So we got right into like the not sort of the deep end, but like one of the biggest existential questions. But I want to step back a little bit and ask you in your opinion on what the metaverse has, the capital M metaverse promise, what that would have over the current state of the internet. Like what does it solve? Like what, if it's an evolution, what features does it have that is more, that shows that it's more evolved and it's the next level?
That's a great question. So I think that if we want to basically characterize the one with the capital M as a truly immersive, interactive environment, where basically it's a mix of like the internet, online gaming. It's got amazing spatial audio, also maps play into that. And so if it is like the convergence of all this into something that it feels also natural, I think there are a few missing pieces. They are like, I would say, quite important. One of them is the ability not only to represent your digital identity, but to actually move your digital identity accordingly. So feeling natural movements, being able to apply your facial expression to your avatar, being able to wave at people and like do all the non-verbal communication that we do normally when we go hang out, you know, with other people, doing that in the metaverse in a natural way that is not like, you know, pressing a button and just repeating a short loop animation. So I think that part is going to be quite important, and it's going to feel really good. And so I'm lucky enough to sit on the board of a company called Rococo, based in Denmark, and they make this full body motion capture suits and also facial animation. And when you put them on and you see the character moving with you, it just feels good. You know, it feels like you are that character. And so it kind of creates that illusion. And I think it will be a much more satisfying experience. I mean, we have seen this, of course, in the Ready Player One movie, these like futuristic mock-up suits, but we are not too far from that in the current market to at least have something that you can animate and feel yourself with your gesture in a way that people can recognize.
Our company has played around with those suits as well. So we're aligned with you that like the nonverbal communication is vitally important to actually bring people together. Like, I think that like one of the things that Web 2 in its evolution of all users being contributors and the contributing much in the way of text as the primary way for the communication has created a lot of problems, let's say, because of the inarticulate way of communication that is text only. And video is helped a bit, but it's not in real time. So there's issues there with connecting with each other in a human way. So we're with you there. Like our avatars, instead of the paradigm of the designed avatars, we have screens that just show that float around that host the screen of you. So you actually, because in a B2B environment, we think it's really, really important to be able to see all these nonverbal in order to create accelerated trust. But inevitably, we believe that like the future of it, once the technology comes there, is the identity you craft, but with all of the intent behind the communication that you have being intact. So we have played around with those suits for mostly our like keynote speakers, because you know it's difficult to deploy for you know a large scale event of everyone in a mocap suit. But the idea of the speaker being able to communicate, you know, exactly the way that they want to at the depth that they want to has some value. But yeah, so like the level of persistentness, I think is another key element of what potentially the metaverse has over two as well. Do you believe that like there's that's an aspect to like, how does that even play in to like things like belonging or like communities? Is that something that is going to move it forward?
Yeah, I think there are two levels of persistency. The one is persistency of whatever digital experience you're living, and like for example, you're like on a metaverse gaming platform, and then you know the game is going to be there, your achievements will be there, your identity will be there any day for the foreseeable future. So that's one aspect that I think we already have achieved, because basically those platforms do keep, you know, the records and the data of your experiences, and you can go back to those. The other axis, I would say, is persistency in space. And so there, it's all about like this concept of maps. And we drew kind of like a diagram that has two extremes about like metaverse maps. One extreme is like Google Maps, Apple Maps, very utilitarian, very anchored to the real world. There's a one-on-one correspondence between a geolocation on the planet and what you can see in those platforms, mapping platforms. And then the opposite of that spectrum is a completely artificial, made-up map in VR, where it's like a totally random virtual world. It can be 10 times bigger than the Earth or 10 times smaller or anything in between, right? And so there it's completely arbitrary, and then the owner of the platform will want to like persist that, so it's consistent. So if you go back to that one island that you bought for $1 million, it's still there in the same place, and you can build on top of that. In the middle, we see hybrid versions where, for example, you can add as many content layers on top of a Google Map or Apple Map that you want, and people could subscribe to those as you subscribe to a YouTube channel. So the anchoring of those maps is still based on the real world, but the content, there can be as much content as you want on the same location belonging to the different content layers. And then there are also, just to make it more confusing, ways to go from one to another. So you can have a VR bubble inside an AR experience.
Yes.
And all those like mixing and matching. And so the persistency of those, I think, will be important because people will then really enjoy and engage with those words, knowing that the locations at which something happened or they have bought some goods or a specific reference to an experience is going to be there for the foreseeable future. And so on that front, we are kind of there in terms of basic infrastructure, but there's not a ton of content for people to go back to at the moment. But it's a pretty well-defined direction, I think, that the industry will move towards.
Yeah, no, I subscribe to all of it. You know, like I think it's inevitable that all of these things will exist because they're augmenters in the same way that like what Snap's been doing with their latest iteration of spectacles, what Pokemon Go has been doing for 5 years. Like that's, a metaversal experience that is an added layer on top of, the physical world. And I also think that there's plenty of room for the universes that don't exist, as well. And then the interconnectivity between the two is going to be really interesting as far as like, especially commerce, being able to, see a spot that, an ad in the real world that makes you go into a fictional space or, like the bridges will be super fascinating because I've seen less of that because of most things are, gardens currently. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm excited for all of it, frankly. I mean, we're in this experimental stage where, like we were in Web 1 and Web 2, where it's just sort of bonkers ideas, and we'll see what sticks. The current internet, I think that just it has so much wanting for richer experiences. I mean, the experience element to me is the big paradigm shift, like mostly because like that's where I come from is that world, and like. Designing experiences, the web hasn't really ever been a great place for that. It's been a place for deployment of information, maybe storytelling at its best, but it's not really experiential. It's been really the difference between the digital and in IRL. And now we're blurring those lines. Like now the designed experiences will be valuable. In that way, I'm curious and as far as your vision or where you feel the business to business or work life world is going to be impacted by the metaverse, be it lowercase or capital, do you see a big shift there?
I see a shift in what people talk about in the keynotes and when they give like a product roadmap of their own platforms. And they're making pretty bold statements, about those, like, if you want to call them like gaming platforms, becoming something where like people will actually do work, right? So it's very interesting. I mean, we have seen this, of course, with Meta, but also with Roblox, maybe Fortnite, like at some point, when you have such a big audience and you have such a big investment in terms of like digital identity and also comfort in being the platform, like every time you join a new platform, there's the highest level of discomfort because you don't know, maybe you don't have the muscle memories of the key to navigate around, the UI is new, right? But then as you spend time in it, you become more and more comfortable and it becomes an extension basically of who you are. And so I can see how those platforms will leverage that and then say, okay, now you're very comfortable here. Do you actually want to do work? Do you want to meet people? And do you want to have meetings and all that? And so I think very strangely, it feels like the new work environment in the metaverse may just be an extension of our leisure time experiences. In a way that is probably was a little bit unpredictable because those two words have always been like very separate. Do you want to do a video conference or do you want to play a game? But now again, as you said, the lines are getting blurred and a lot of the technology that is built for game is fantastic for real-time collaboration for work, for example, that you don't have when you use like a video conferencing infrastructure or tool. And so I see a lot of the real-time collaboration infrastructure being built in these metaverses and games. And that's why I think they could actually provide a real-world solution for work and B2B in the future, more than we will expect.
Yeah, the friction for adopting new platforms, especially around persistence, and that is a really, really great point as far as new players coming in. Like there's going to be a saturation point, I think, for the amount of variations on this, unless people get really, really uniform in the way that these act. You know, that could be another way that it could be a little bit less of an issue. But I see that Fortnite's and the like really being valuable for like team building potentially, or maybe it's more of the culture end of it. Like I guess that's an element that I'm really curious about. So like what do you see the metaverse coming into remote work as something that might bridge some gaps? Like what are the holes right now? I mean, do you personally work remote frequently?
I work remote about half of the time.
Yeah. Okay.
Half in the office. And I think what is missing again is this.
What are your pain points? Like you work remote. What are you missing?
I think there are like advantages and disadvantages on both. Number one thing that I'm missing is like the random encounter in the corridor or
yes.
The CEO. And like, oh, by the way, this is happening. Right. So that kind of interaction, you don't have it, of course, because everything is so prescriptive when you work remotely. So if there was a way to still hang out in a virtual world type of work environment, then you will still have these encounters. They won't be as immediate. You won't be able to, read facial expression, understand if someone is on the phone call or busy or wants to talk to you. Right. That's why I think it's important that we capture and then manifest all this nonverbal communication, but it could help in some form. It will require that everybody is persistently in those platforms. And so it's a big ask. So I'm not sure how that will pan out. And also there's going to be a little bit of digital fatigue. You're like on Zoom, and then you're also on this virtual world and some random person can come to you and talk to you. So I'm not sure this is going to truly happen unless it's like an intentional thing where this is like the meeting of everybody in the company. We're all in this big room. We can all chat. We have 3D audio. And so it's not all the chat are coming to me, but it's depending where I am. And I can go there and talk to this group and to this group. And I know and I recognize who they are because of how they look and their avatar is like photorealistic. Right. So that is, I can see that in like specific events when this is happening and you can bring everybody around the world in the same location. But probably this will probably enter in our lives in a way that we are not fully, expecting right now.
The serendipitous connections, I think, is exactly one of the things that gets me the most excited about 3D environments when it comes to replicating the best of being in person and working together. It's surprising how valuable those end up being. Even stories of, right now with Zoom, you talk to who you need to talk to about what you need to talk to, and that's about it. And that sounds efficient, and I think it actually is. But in a world where everything is exclusively built on efficiency, like it's robots, it's not how we actually are. And you're right, like those things where you bump into the CEO and he's like, by the way, did you know this? Like that's a big deal. Like those things have the ability to change a lot because that you're just seeing that person and it spurs something in you and reminds you. Meanwhile, if you're going to call your CEO and just ask, how's your day going? On Zoom, that's weird, right? Like you're like, good. Do you need something? No. Okay. Bye. That's not going to work. So, but if you wave to them, or if they have like, let's say it's a metaverse and there's an open door aspect of their, then it's like it invites these kinds of connections and it makes for more human exchanges. Like a friend of mine who is an experience designer, she calls it designing for human collision, and it's a really interesting way that you create these moments, opportunities for these moments. You don't hyper design them, but you create the opportunities for them, and with that you become a much richer community as opposed to what I think that the pain is right now is what it feels like a lot of freelancers all sort of doing their freelance work, but no real connectivity to the brand itself and no community. Interesting. I guess my last question is, what should we be looking for to know that the metaverse is going to be in its next stage? So if we're in the lowercase m, we're in the emerging, we're in that, what would it take to push it to the next level beyond, let's say, a giant organization changing their name? Like, what's the real thing that we should be looking for to say, okay, we're in stage two?
So I'm sure a million people have said the same thing before, so I'm not trying to be original. But there is one thing that I think will make a big step, and it's when the experience of viewing the metaverse is something that I can combine with my wearable technology to actually move around, right? So right now, I do have wearable technology sitting right here that I can put on and then be who I am and move, and then can also broadcast my facial expression in real time. But ultimately, I'm stuck to this monitor, right? And unless I walk around with my computer, which will be super weird, the two worlds of like the visualization and the embodiment through wearable devices are right now like pretty divergent. But once, you know, glasses are here and they work wirelessly with my phone and I can move around, then I think that would be a major breakthrough, because all of a sudden, you know, my virtual world doesn't have to be within like 3 feet of my desk, right? It can be in my garden, can be anywhere. So I can set up a place to do work or to play games or whatever in the physical world that I like in that moment, and I can move within it with a lot of freedom. And so I think that will take away some of these like claustrophobic feelings sometimes when you're like stuck in there and like you don't know exactly what keys to do what action. And instead, in this new world where like the wearable device that you're using to be who you are and the way you experience, they're all in the same physical location, they can move around, and then everything feels more natural. Actually, you have to learn less about how to operate in this metaverse because the real world rules apply perfectly, one-to-one. And so I think that would be a major breakthrough. Probably we are still like 3-4 years from it, but you know, first devices will come out sooner than that, and then I think we'll start giving us a glimpse, and then as adoption will ramp up, I think more and more people will find those really life-changing.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, like one of the things that I'm hoping for the most with this is the empowerment of people who have felt like left out, you know, in other arenas. Maybe they've not been able to contribute as easily in IRL things, and they'll feel much more immersed and be able to contribute to communities. It's the equity element that I think is the most valuable, you know, hopeful promise of what comes from this. But I agree that, I mean, there's an element of 5G deployment, you know, internationally that fixes into this, but it's really the killer hardware that is not 10 pounds on your head that will make the difference.
I'm lucky enough with my work to try a lot of those prototypes, and the progress has been phenomenal. And I now see things out that I would say, okay, just make it like half the weight and I'll be wearing this like every day.
Yeah, that's the challenge, right? But everything else has done that, right? You know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so it's just a matter of time, but like the quality of the experience, the brightness, the contrast, the fidelity, the resolution, it's all there. Like I've seen AR headsets, they are just, you know, they almost look better than the monitor in front of my desktop computer right now.
Man, I can't wait. You know, selfishly, I just want to be able to, you know, play Pokemon Go without having to use my phone. So I'm, you know, I work in a completely different, you know, take on the metaverse, but I'm really also like into the AR version of it as well. Like I've spent 20 years in experience design and augmenting live experiences with AR is going to be super cool. I mean, we're just going to be able to modify things and get more information and clarify things, and it's just going to be great. So super cool. Well, Stefano, I appreciate this time a ton. Where could our listeners find you online to keep up with some of the things that you get to see? And, you know, I mean, do you get to share some of this stuff, or is it all sort of proprietary?
No, it's not proprietary. I think LinkedIn is where I post about this stuff and Twitter as well. And I think we're going to have in the next month a blog post coming out with some exciting news about the AR world and the tools that we're building at Adobe. And so you'll see on LinkedIn or Twitter those posted with some detail.
Very cool. Well, in the show notes for this episode, we'll have all the links there too, with whatever you share me in your LinkedIn. So that'll be great. And if you want to reach us here at Exchange with what you think we should cover on future seasons, it's exchange@allseated.com. But I want to thank everybody for listening. Anyone who is, pushing the envelope for connecting people, you're an active agent of positive change, and I thank you. So thanks a lot. I appreciate this, Stefano.
Thank you, Nick. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So why is the metaverse inevitable? Is it?
Because it's the natural evolution of communication.
The best part of the metaverse is, or will be,
the same platform that you use to hang out, you can use it to make movies.
What's missing in digital communication right now?
The ability to stream everything about your body, facial expression, and everything seamlessly.
What would it take for people to want to work in the metaverse?
It needs to be fun and efficient. And I'm not sure we're there yet.
What's a positive change that could come to the world through the adoption of the metaverse?
I think it can bring a lot of empathy for other people, because you can experience the situation, the lives of others, and you can connect and empathize with them much better.
Lastly, what should anyone be worried about when it comes to the onset of the metaverse?
Maybe make sure that you get your information straight from the media so that they don't bend your will, but you know how to fight the good battle, and then support, open standard and openness.
Love that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Power your corporate metaverse with Metaverse. Collaborate in digital workspaces designed to accelerate sales, provide immersive brand experiences, and support thriving work environments. Metaverse by All Seated. Start now at metaverse.com. Thanks for listening to Exchange. What's your take on the conversation? Share your thoughts at exchange@allseated.com. To catch every episode of Exchange, subscribe now.